Welcome to the program for Wednesday, November 7th, 2012 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the 3 o'clock hour, as we do every Wednesday at 3, it's Pentagon Solutions. We talk to people both inside and outside the building about the issues the Pentagon is dealing with and look at potential solutions for those challenges. And today we're going technically inside the building, although you're inside my building today. Dave Wennergren, the Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer of the Pentagon, is here today. It's great to see you again, my friend.
It's great to be here with you.
I'm happy to have you back in the studio. It has been a while, and we'll have to remedy that. We'll make sure that it's not like 2 years till the next time you come, as it was. It seems to be, I believe, last time you were here. It is great to have you here. We are here, of course, the day after the election, and some challenges are ahead for the Pentagon, for the Defense Department. One of the things that I'd like to start with is just talking about what all is included in the portfolio at the Office of the Deputy Chief Management Officer. Your boss, Beth McGrath, and you are responsible for what range of activities at DOD, Dave?
Absolutely. So our job is to manage the business of defense. And if you think about it, the Department of Defense is a monstrously big place with 3.5 million people spread around the world. And so a number of business operations take place in DOD, everything from financial management to logistics to human resources. And our job is to look across all the business space of all the sort of functional leaders of DOD and all of the components, the military departments and defense agencies, and find ways to improve business operations and make them more effective and efficient. So we have these great jobs of sort of being the change leaders to help drive performance improvement and process change across the entire Department of Defense.
That means you have your hands in just about every aspect of operations.
Yes,
across the Pentagon.
Absolutely. And you know how it goes. We're not doctors or lawyers or logisticians or personnelists, but we help each of them try to do their jobs better.
Yeah. The idea of that is the aspect of that I think is most fascinating right now is the push that the agency is under to get to auditability. You have the deadline, the 2014 deadline for some of the statements, and then auditability by 2017. The anecdotal pieces that I hear from the individual branches and other parts of DOD is that's in fits and starts, but happening. Is that a fair assessment of where that process stands, do you think?
Yeah, there's a lot of energy being devoted to it. You know, if you look at the sort of strategic plan for the department in its business space, our strategic management plan, we have 7 major goals, and that's one of them. And it's focused on, you know, being good stewards of the taxpayer dollars and getting ourselves to the financial auditability targets that the secretary set for us. And as they say, we're sparing no men or material. We have a lot of people working on it, and we're committed to hitting those dates.
You mentioned the strategic management plan. It's been almost a year since the annual strategic management plan came out. Are we due for another one sometime here soon?
Yes, we're working on a 2-year cycle now, and so we're beginning to get ready. We have a new one that we'll be rolling out this June. And so it's continuing evolution. I'm really pleased with the one that we have out now. It has a maturity to it that for the first time in the history of the Department of Defense, you know, the strategic management plan, which is required by statute, actually really does reflect the visions of the leaders of the Department of Defense. So there is a goal about financial management, and it reflects the DOD Comptroller Bob Hill's personal imperatives, what he intends to spend his time and attention on over the next couple of years. And likewise, each of the 7 goals has a goal owner of that level, an undersecretary level individual who is committed to, these are the explicit outcomes I want to get to, these are the initiatives I'm going to put in place to get there, and these are the measures that I'm going to use in order to, you know, monitor the progress of my plans.
Throughout the course of the program, maybe we can tear into some of those, some of the other 6 goals there, and just see where some of those stand and the kind of progress that you're making. I mentioned the financial challenges that the department is up against, and the entire federal government, to be fair. One of the things that we keep hearing, one of the buzzwords that we hear, is innovation, 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 innovation. How do you do that at a time when budgets are shrinking, the top line is getting smaller, and of course there's the S word out there, of which we will not speak today.
Thank you.
That may or may not add another layer of challenges on here in a couple of months.
If you're an optimist like me, you view these moments of as moments of inflection that you can really force change to happen. But so often what I see happens is, you know, when financial times get tough, we hunker down into that which we know best. And that which we know best is the stuff that's been around for a while. So the legacy systems that have been in the budget for years, and we hunker down and defend them because times are tough financially. And the new stuff, the stuff that actually takes advantage of these dramatic changes in information technology and process approach, are the things that fall off the bus. We become stupid. Lord Rutherford, the father of nuclear physics, had a great quote about, we had no money, so we had to think. And so, you know, our challenge collectively will be, hey, this old stuff can't be the stuff that you hunker down on, because you will just get farther and farther behind.
The term that comes to mind when I hear you say we go back to that which we know best is, well, we do it that way because we've always done it that way.
Yes.
And that, I think, when you frame it that way, it's obvious to people that, well, that's not really a great excuse.
Hey, you know, one of the reasons that you are where you are today is because of your sparkling wit and keen intellect. But you're also, you know, in a senior position because you're really good at the processes and systems. And that's the way it works across government and industry. We rise to these levels because we know how to get things done in that environment. When some fundamental technology change occurs, suddenly all those skills that brought you to this place may not be what it takes to get you to the next place. And so it's very easy, if you're not excited about change kind of person, it's very easy to sort of hunker down on that, well, we can't change because then I'll no longer be the expert.
How much of that is procedural and policy, and how much of it is just cultural? It sounds like a lot of that is more cultural when it's, you know, personal emotions and insecurity, which is what it kind of sounds like.
Yeah, amen to that. All this technology change would be so simple if people weren't involved, wouldn't it? Because the technology is out there to allow you to do things in wonderfully different ways. And our challenge collectively is, how do you get people to face that change? If you look at a bell curve of any large organization, you'd be foolish to think the majority of people are living out there in that part of the curve that are, I just can't wait to change. At best, people are sort of change neutral or change averse. So yeah, it's all about helping people to get out of the comfort zone about what they've known, to be willing to take a step to what it could be.
You have said business process change must precede IT investments. You have to fix the process first before you start spending on technology. I want to explore that a little bit more when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Dave Winogrand, the Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at the Department of Defense, is my guest today on Pentagon Solutions on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
A big
reward
just for federal employees, a wellness incentive worth up to $50. And that's just one of the extra benefits at no extra cost with the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Service Benefit Plan. You also get everything from free annual physicals to generic drug incentives. To learn about our other
rewards
and about the wellness incentive, visit extras.fepblue.org or call 1-800-411-BLUE.
You wouldn't drive your kids in the car without them wearing seatbelts, would you? So why leave them unprotected when you're gone? Learn about the latest techniques for maximizing your wealth and protecting your assets for your heirs. Join me, Wayne Zell, for Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. I'm an estate planning attorney with Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman. Each week, we talk about how you can realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. That's Blueprint for Wealth, Saturdays at 10 a.m., right here on 1500 AM.
Could your IT security have made you less secure? Traditional IT security defenses, firewalls, encryption, and intrusion detection systems are extremely effective, and that's the problem. They're so good that the bad guys now have a new target: exploitable vulnerabilities in software applications. HP can help you secure critical applications to run your agency's most vital operations by designing security in from the beginning, finding vulnerabilities inside existing software, and fixing them quickly and cost-effectively. Make security matter. HP.com/go/cybersecurity.
Hey, federal employees. Choose the plan we believe is altogether better for your health. Kaiser Permanente. Get the inside story on better care. Join a Kaiser Permanente physician for a complimentary Fed webinar scheduled most Wednesdays through December 5th. Go to kp.org/midatlantic to register for a webinar on Kaiser Permanente federal benefits. That's kp.org/midatlantic. Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States, Inc., 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Here's Thomas McCarty, Director of Identity Credentialing and Access Management Program, DHS, on the Federal Executive Forum on Identity Management, Progress, and Best Practices, sponsored by HP.
I can see a world where I'm not carrying around a wallet full of credit cards.
Right.
I could actually use the device that I use to navigate, communicate, to actually do e-commerce. Having the same level of assurance credential on a different form factor, moving from the plastic to something like the phone is a wave of the future.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Who has access to what, when, how, and why? Are users who they say they are? Who did what and when did they do it? All this should matter. Budget cuts continue. Identity fraud is increasing. Effective enterprise identity, credentialing, and access management are essential. HP can help. HP's Assured Identity Solution is a highly scalable enterprise solution that can be integrated with your existing systems that will amplify the value of the services you provide to your constituents. That really matters. Learn more at hp.com/go/get connected.
The Postal Service is doing all sorts of things to make its workforce match its smaller mission in the email era. I'm Emily Kopp. On Thursday's Federal Drive, Personnel Chief Anthony Villante talks about trimming and rearranging the labor force. And the Agriculture Department is making sure homeless Hurricane Sandy victims can eat warm meals. It all starts at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, Pentagon Solutions, in the 3 o'clock hour every Wednesday. And today it's Dave Wennergren, the Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at the Department of Defense, my guest in studio for the entire hour. And I mentioned a few moments ago, you've been talking about business process change first and then IT investments. I'm curious about a couple of things. First of all, how are you implementing that strategy? And second of all, what does Terry Takai think of that idea?
I would say Terry, who is the DoD CIO, is a great proponent of it, too. As a former CIO myself, you know, it's one of the classic things that you find over and over and over again, that we become so enamored with the shiny object known as the IT system that we lose all sense of. This all started with, there was an outcome that you wanted to achieve, and so there ought to be a process improvement effort that gets you to how you're going to achieve that outcome. And then at some moment in time, you're going to figure out how to insert technology appropriately. And yet, over and over again, we see people who just become so liquored up about the system, and that's all they want to talk about. And that's where so many IT systems go wrong, because we become so divorced from the, you know, a commercial off-the-shelf solution that requires you to have processes a certain way. And then we want to customize the solution, and then it doesn't work well, and all that stuff that happens. And so we get a lot of help in the business space. There's a lot of statutory guidance that we have. One of them is this demand that you do business process reengineering before you go make any major IT investment. And it's crucially important, because if you don't think about how to optimize the process, then you're going to be forever hampered by trying to have your IT figure out how to do a cumbersome process that hasn't, you know, reduced the number of steps and reduced the cost and time it takes to get things done.
What value do you think you add to the equation, coming from a technology background within DOD, to that whole proposition? Because that's something I hear from CIOs across government is, well, the management guys and the financial guys don't understand what we're trying to do, and they don't think of us as full partners. They think of us still as the BlackBerry person and all of that kind of stuff. What do you think you add to that equation?
Yeah, I've looked at life from both sides now.
Yeah.
Right? And so, to me, my favorite part about being a CIO was the sort of process change, strategic, you know, planning kind of aspects of the job. And so it was a really natural fit for me to make that leap from the technology portfolio to the management portfolio. But you have to have a head in both games, because if you don't, you're constantly always enmeshed in technology for technology's sake and not thinking about what's the goal that I want to achieve. And when we were talking about tough financial times, you know, if you're not asking questions about how much does it cost and why does it cost that much and why do we do things this way, you have no hope of reducing costs and making the spend more effectively used.
And that mindset is incumbent on the CIO to change, not the other CXOs to change, it seems to me, because that's That's where the responsibility lies, to kind of change that mindset from being just the technology geek over in the corner to somebody who's a full partner at the table. Yeah, is that fair to say?
Yeah, if you want to be a 21st century CIO, I would say CIOs and CMOs, if you will, chief management officers, they're uniquely positioned to help the functional people understand what they want to get done and how to marry up technology with those functional outcomes to deliver better results.
Are you seeing progress not just in DOD, but I know you have kind of your finger in the pool when it comes to other agencies too, civilian agencies. Are you seeing progress in that ability to stay focused on the mission instead of the bright shiny object syndrome?
Yeah, I do. And one example that I might bring up to you is DOD is in the middle of a very big partnership with the Department of Veterans Affairs to have an integrated electronic health record. If you think about it, it's a simple problem to understand that somebody joins the military and then they have a career in the military and they become a veteran, become a retiree, and throughout the course of their life they could be treated at a military treatment facility or a VA hospital or in theater or at a TRICARE provider, but it's the same person, and so they ought to have one medical record that goes with them forever. Simple thing to say, hard to do across big organizations, but the beauty of the partnership that we have with VA is this demand for process change first. So, for example, we're going to build a common health record approach. It's going to have all these capabilities, pharmacy, laboratory, radiology. But before we're allowing the program team to go buy a pharmacy application, we forced pharmacists from DOD and VA to get in a room with Lean Six Sigma Master Black Belts and requirements analysts to actually say, so let's talk about the process. And you'd be shocked to find out that filling prescriptions is done differently in the two departments. You know?
Shocking.
And so, right. And so could we optimize that process first and agree to it and have the clinicians from both departments agree that this is, you know, medically safe and sound way of doing business, and then turn it over to the program management team to go buy something? Because otherwise you're never going to be able to buy one application to take care of both of us. So there we did it, 40-foot-long maps on the wall of the way the process was and how we could improve it. And so that's a good story about people actually thinking about process first.
And how does that go over within leadership on both sides of that equation? I mean, I imagine when we think about silos, that strikes me that could potentially be a classic silo case. Well, this is how we've always done it. We mentioned that before. And so this is how we're going to do it. And I imagine, again, the cultural part of this is as difficult or maybe more difficult, maybe not even at the leadership level. Maybe it's down a level or two where people say, well, I'm skeptical, this might not work out, I've heard this all before, and so on.
Yeah, that is so true, right? That it's so well said that you know, we become so concerned about, well, the way it will be done won't be the right way. The other thing interesting that happens now is we have such an emphasis on speed and agility and agile acquisition approaches and things like that, that we sometimes, you know, you have to get people to suspend their disbelief momentarily, right? Because they go, well, I don't want to spend a lot of time working on process change because I want to get capabilities delivered quickly. But if you can just spend a little bit of an investment in getting the process done right, you will gain so much speed and momentum when you actually come time to go acquire a product or solution.
Is there such a thing when it comes to that speed and momentum as too much speed and momentum, or is that not necessarily a bad thing all the time?
I'm smiling because, you know, I would say I'm surrounded by people that say, of course there can't be a thing like too much speed. You do have to be a measured pace. I would say we should be pushing together for much faster, because it takes far too long to deliver information technology solutions in government. But with a recognition that, you know, you got to push for faster with a reasonability, right? If you don't push people to move faster, then you'll continue to use the same old processes that have given us the past, where it's taken years to get customers to actually have new capabilities in their hands. That can't work. Today, it's all about defining something that's in a small enough bite that you can do it in a modular way in a rapid amount of time. So it's 6 to 12, 18-month increments where you're delivering something that the customer can look, touch, feel, and help improve, rather than in the past where we would take our time and spend years before you actually shared the new thing with the customer.
Now, in the example that you just gave, there were two words that I heard there that I think make the hearts of the vendors that are listening to our conversation very happy, and those words are requirements experts. To know that there are people in the room who are listening and who are going to be tracking where these processes go. Because I hear time and again from vendors, requirements are just all over the map and they change all the time, and we can't keep up. And that's that's where they like to put the blame sometimes as to why things go awry long term.
Yeah, there are so many things that make things go awry, but you've hit on one of the really important ones. If you don't take the time to figure out what the requirement is, what the capability is you want to achieve, and how you can write down what that requirement is, I mean, it's not overkill where you spend like 6 years doing it. But if you can't describe what you want to do, then you're right. Then it becomes really hard to ever delight the customer, either the customer in terms of the government receiving something from industry, or the customer, in this case, being the clinicians that have to use a medical solution. You got to be able to describe the problem in the outcome that you want to achieve first.
Another progress question then, are you seeing progress not just in this particular aspect in these electronic health records, but in the requirements creep problem overall as you look across the contracting space at DOD?
Yes, I do. And I say that as words of encouragement to my industry partners who are listening, because, you know, it is a constant refrain that I hear. In the Department of Defense, we have something called the Business Capabilities Lifecycle. And it's our approach about, you know, buying new business IT capabilities is different than buying the next nuclear submarine. And so, you know, one set of acquisition rules is fine, but how you apply those rules should be done differently. And part of the key of the Business Capabilities Lifecycle process is this idea about understand your problem and requirements first, and sort of mesh that together with, you know, idea to outcome in one constant flow that allows you to do things in bite-sized pieces and deliver new capabilities.
Dave Wintergreen is the Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at the Department of Defense, my guest in studio for Pentagon Solutions today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
BYOD. The employee owns the devices, they bring them into work, and then they hook up to the local network. And so this whole movement toward portable devices is actually transforming all of IT. And there are a lot of opportunities there. All the security related to BYOD, bring your own device, a lot of security issues, security policy relating there. Application development for all of these items, it's a very, very big area.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
The March of Dimes and AFSEA Nova will honor women in the technology industry who are making a difference in their communities at the 12th annual Heroines in Technology Gala, November 9th. From CEOs to entrepreneurs, these women exemplify leadership and volunteerism in their community. Proceeds from this Black Tie Awards program will benefit the March of Dimes and its fight to prevent birth defects, premature birth, and infant mortality. To learn more, visit marchofdimes.com/metrodc.
When lives are at stake, you need technology you can count on. FLIR Systems' legacy of life-saving thermal imaging sensors continues through their offering of full-spectrum chemical, biological, radiation, and explosive threat detection systems and beyond-the-fence perimeter security solutions. Visit FLIR.com to learn more. FLIR Systems, because it's not just your job, it's your life.
More tanning bed cancers. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Tanning beds can raise your risk of the deadly skin cancer, melanoma, and researchers now say your risk of other forms of skin cancer, not as often deadly, but damaging to your looks. At the University of California, San Francisco, Eleni Linos reviewed data from articles involving about 80,000 people. She says indoor tanning accounts for about 170,000 new cases a year of these non-melanoma skin cancers. And she says the risk is higher among people under 25.
I'd recommend that people avoid indoor tanning salons entirely. They're dangerous, and we now have evidence that they cause all types of skin cancer, and to a significant degree.
The study in the British journal BMJ was supported by the U.S. National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
The Bring Your Own Device Toolkit, released in September to supplement the CIO Council's digital government strategy, promises to reduce costs, increase program productivity, and improve effectiveness. In order to implement their mobile strategy, agencies must answer a host of security, policy, technical, and legal challenges. Join AFSCIA Bethesda on November 15th at the Bethesda North Marriott as agency leaders discuss the policies, challenges, and best practices of Bring Your Own Device programs. Register today at AFSCIABethesda.org/NOVBreakfast.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Pentagon Solutions today and every Wednesday in the 3 o'clock hour. We talk to leaders inside and outside the Pentagon about the challenges that they are dealing with. And my guest on the program today is Dave Wennergren, the Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at the Department of Defense. Dave, we talked a little bit about the strategic management plan. And one of the elements of the strategic management plan is surrounds IT capabilities. Rob Carey was on the program not too long ago talking about the JIE and some of the other IT initiatives that the Pentagon is working on. Talk about the management piece of that, though, and what those mean. As you alluded to earlier, you can do all the initiatives that you want, but if they're not of value to the end user, either the warfighter or the person inside the Pentagon serving the warfighter, there's no point in having them. Talk about developing these things from a management perspective to make sure that they meet the mission and aren't just technologically sound.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that you said Rob was on your show, because Rob's a super guy, and he and what his team is doing to try to put into place this joint information environment is just hugely important to all of us. If you think about how you manage your personal life, you have an iPhone or a Droid, and it's all about a common platform upon which applications can be provided rapidly. It becomes like this win-win, because I can custom get exactly what I need to meet my needs, and I can get it really quickly. It's a different business model for our industry partners, because it's about a whole lot of little bites at the apple rather than the one big build me an enterprise resource planning solution and be my contractor for the next 10 years. But it is a business model that is sustainable with multiple increments. And so to us, one of the most important things is our teammates down the hall, literally at the Pentagon in the CIO shop, to work this JIE concept and put it into place. Because if we can move away from disparate networks and security architectures that don't allow for the flow of information and you know, multitude of underutilized and overcooled data centers and a common security architecture, et cetera, then you really will be able to publish your architecture and your interfaces and allow people to build applications that can ride on it. We were talking about the healthcare space before the last break. And that's exactly what's happening there. Rather than the way we might have done things before, where you would go out and buy a commercial solution that was proprietary and tightly coupled, what we've done is we've said we have an open data model that all of DoD and VA will use, and we published it to the public. So anybody in the healthcare space can use it, can build to it. We put into place a service-oriented architecture where we have an enterprise service bus. And all the interfaces to it are known and understood, so the architecture is open and available. And then we have a development environment where anybody who wants to come in and develop the pharmacy application or the laboratory application can show how it works. And so what ends up happening is you begin to pick up this speed, because now the person who wants to do laboratory or immunizations or emergency department stuff, they don't have to worry about all this other stuff. They can see how it works, and they can plug right into it, so you can get better solutions much more rapidly.
Does that idea of that essentially sounds like open source in a manner of speaking. If all of that is out there and people can just take it and use it in whatever way they want to try to plug into what you're doing, what are the security implications there?
Yeah, I'll take a moment, and I'll run the risk of becoming too techie, and I will apologize for that in advance.
There's no such thing for this audience.
Well, that's good to hear. So, because everybody's got to be tech savvy today. So I would make the distinction between open architecture and open source software, both of which are really important. And, I've been a huge advocate of open source for a long time, too. But for the health thing, it's an open architecture. So I'm perfectly happy that that the pharmacy application could come from any company that's in the business, or it could become some new open source software product. But open source in this case is sort of a source of supply. The open architecture is all about understanding, you know, what to build to. And so it doesn't necessarily mean that your software has to be open source. It just means you have to be able to plug in. So, you know, it's like your house, right? All the plugs will fit in the wall, and you know that going in, so you don't have to worry about custom plugs. Now, break from that open architecture conversation. You make a very valid point about open source, and people have security concerns. But I often feel like in the open source software business, what we fail to understand is that it goes both ways, right? And so if you don't know what's going on, then you could worry about security controls. But oftentimes with open source software, the sort of peer review that takes place allows, you know, potentially millions of lines of code to have many, many eyes on them looking for vulnerabilities. So open source software, when done correctly and used for the right purposes, can actually help raise the bar in security.
The open source reference more as an analogy than as a parallel, but I guess the idea of open anything when it comes to defense systems still
yes.
probably makes people
strikes
queasy
fear in the hearts of
yeah,
many. Yeah,
exactly.
And I don't want to make light of it because, you know, the security challenge that we face is very significant. Public sector, private sector, our networks are under attack, and the information capital of our organizations is at risk. Having said all that, though, the world has changed dramatically. And if we think only about security as we've thought about it in the past, we're missing this major opportunity to take advantage of the information sharing capabilities that exist before us. So you're right. Security has to be baked in from the very beginning in everything that we do. And I often tell groups that I talk to that if you could do me one favor for a day, and that would be to stop separating out information security as a discipline and an understanding from information sharing, because information sharing is all about the mission of the organization, and you have to be able to share effectively and securely. And so for the next 24 hours, if your audience could just not say the words information assurance or network security and instead say secure information sharing, we'd actually get to the heart of the matter, which is you have to find ways to share information with people you never dreamed possible while raising the bar in security. And to your point about open architecture doesn't necessarily impede your security, right? Because it's just saying this is how the plug is going to fit. Still got a job to do to make sure that you're protecting your data and protecting your information and its systems and your people.
Now, when we talk about security, Dave, from a management perspective and not just from the IT perspective, I'm reminded of one of the DoD reports that I did. I think it's now been about 3 weeks or a month ago. It was during Cybersecurity Awareness Month, but I think toward the beginning, about a phishing exercise that took place inside the Pentagon, or inside DoD, not just the building, where some emails went out to people with .mil email addresses, and there were some one of them was like Steven Strasburg, something about him. And what is the management component of that to try to educate people inside the Pentagon about how easy it is for them to give up information that's potentially damaging to the organization just by making a simple mistake?
Yeah, it's a subject area that I'm very passionate about because you have to do both. You have to have technology solutions in place that are monitoring. If you have no idea how many internet access points you have, heaven help you. And if you haven't reduced your internet access points to a manageable number and have monitoring on those, then you're not going to get the job done. Intrusion detection, firewalls, all those things have important places in the world. But to your point, it takes more than that. It takes a really well-informed workforce that understands. And what has so often happened in the past, and it's happened at great peril, is rather than making sure that you have a trained and ready workforce that's ready to work in today's internet world, we've just tried to block access and wall ourselves off. And, you know, that creates these self-inflicted denial of service attacks that don't need to take place. And so you can, you know, one of the things that we spend a lot of time on in DoD is information assurance training for our workforce and having a continued conversation about how do you be a savvy internet user both in your personal life and your professional life.
When we come back from the break, Dave, I want to kind of expand on this because the next step in the joint information environment is enabling cloud and using shared services to obtain some of these and all those kinds of things. So I'd like to explore that with you a little bit when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Dave Wintergreen, Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at the Defense Department's my guest on Pentagon Solutions today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Are you shopping for insurance in the same place you go to watch cat videos? Don't spend hours trolling the internet looking for cheap dental or vision plans. Call the Government Employees Benefit Association. With GEBA, you'll work with knowledgeable representatives who understand the intricacies of your government benefits and lifestyle. Based on your needs, they can offer government employees, like you, basic and enhanced policies at competitive rates. They offer comprehensive dental plans that give members the freedom to choose a dentist they know and also the ability to roll over up to $1,000 in unused benefits. With GEBA's Vision Plan, members get the advantage of competitive rates with an extensive network of ophthalmologists, optometrists, opticians, and retailers, plus an annual pair of glasses or contact lenses. Open enrollment for dental and vision plans runs from November 12th to December 17th. For more information, visit GEBA.com or call 1-800-826-1126 to speak with a representative today and stop wasting time searching online.
The U.S. Postal Service is an agency in transition. Despite consolidation and multiple rounds of buyouts, USPS still has massive debt. Federal News Radio's November Agency of the Month program examines how USPS intends to get back on solid financial footing. In an exclusive interview, Postmaster General Patrick Donahue explains why it's critical Congress pass postal reform legislation. Find it at federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency of the Month.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on Pentagon Solutions today is the Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at the Department of Defense, Dave Wintergreen, in studio with me on Pentagon Solutions today. We've been talking a little bit about how IT fits into the strategic management plan, Dave. One of the elements of IT strategy that's been front and center since the 25-point plan and maybe even before is cloud computing. We finally, it appears that folks have coalesced around at least an understanding of what cloud computing is. It took a little longer than maybe some folks would have liked. And recently we're hearing a lot about shared services. In fact, Jeff Zients saying that at some point shared services might become mandatory. So a lot of people pushing that on the bandwagon. You're at a unique place when it comes to all of these initiatives, because I've had any number of CXOs across government say, well, we're going to watch and see what the Pentagon does. So you and your team are in a leadership role in a lot of these issues. How do things like that fit with what you're trying to achieve? And is there a chicken and egg factor here possibly where you're developing a strategy and, you know, these things don't happen overnight, and then something comes from OMB, and how you make all of these things fit together, especially considering that other people are going to be watching what you're doing?
Yeah, you know, the joke about DOD is we're happy to be in the cloud as long as none of the rest of you are there with us. and you know, and there's a certain amount of truth to that. But at the same time, you know, not everything is the same. And so we often paint with too broad a brushstroke. And so at one end of the spectrum, you have, you know, highly classified work that you're really glad is done on highly classified networks and protected. But then, you know, frankly, People use these social media tools and public forums to do collaboration across boundaries and save lives during disaster relief. And so you got to be part of the public sometimes. And so we have to figure out a way to work ourselves through this. And frankly, this sort of I run the risk of doing IT bingo with your listeners because I do three hype words in a row. But between service-oriented architecture and Web 2.0 and cloud computing, and granted, there's hype about each one of those, but there's something really positive and powerful about all three of those things. And if you're not willing to take advantage of those, you're not going to get the sort of wave of change that's taking place that's going to allow you to move forward. If you look at the business space in the Department of Defense, we spend $7 billion a year on business IT systems out of the entire $38 billion budget for DoD for IT. $7 billion a year. 75% of that budget goes towards sustaining the old, the legacy environment. Only 25% is going towards the new. That's not a pace that can get you to the world that you need to be at, the pace that the world is changing. And so you have to find some ways to take advantage of these ideas like a common platform and the advantage of cloud computing and things like that to allow you to move with more speed and get these shared services in place and manage services that can deliver stuff more rapidly. You don't work on this in a vacuum anymore, and you can't afford to build it all and own it all yourself.
The very term shared services, though, implies that you have to share it with somebody. And the one of the knocks on the Pentagon for years, decades, has been, well, we do it our way, they do it their way, and never the twain shall meet. Is that,
there's hope,
is that changing?
Yes, there's hope. And so I think you're right. But I think it's broader than just the Pentagon. You know, we want personal control. We feel so much better when we own it all ourselves. And at the heart of shared services is this need to rely upon somebody else to do something for you. And so there are ways to work around that, service level agreements and performance measures so you can measure the progress of your plans. But we have to just sort of get over ourselves. So if you look around, I think there's signs in the right direction. As recently as a few years ago, you know, we had separate security controls for the civilian side of government and DOD and the intelligence community. And when I was looking after the Committee for National Security Systems, we worked together to have a common set of security controls across the entire federal government for the first time ever. And so now, if you're our industry partners, you can build for everyone. And so, and we have HSPD 12 cards, right, across all government, not just DOD. And we're working on a common token solution for the secret networks across the government. And so there are examples about how people are sort of getting over themselves that they have to own it all and do it all themselves. But it's a constant battle because it's about being willing to let go of personal control.
And I've used this word a bunch of times, and I think it's appropriate here. It's cultural, isn't it?
Amen to that. It is all about culture. You know, it is about stepping out of your comfort zone and being willing to have a relationship with someone else to get something done. And frankly, the heart of it all is performance management. If you can describe the outcome measure that you want to achieve and you're going to track it together, then you can get over this sort of lack of trust that involves. And we've had this conversation before about the importance of how much longer and how much more it costs to work in low-trust environments. And one of the best ways to sort of raise the trust is to have an outcome that you're going to track together so that you can keep each other, hold each other accountable for the result.
Is demonstrating that result sufficient, though, to get people out of comfort zones and get them to go areas where they might not ordinarily want to go or be willing to go?
It's necessary but not sufficient. I would argue that there's a whole sort of slew of management tools that you have to put into place, and they start with the commitment of senior leadership, right, to help force the change to begin, and then the checking back in. In his book, The Innovator's Dilemma, Clayton Christensen talks about how organizations are ill-suited to create the new idea. The fascinating thing for everyone to think about is that the new idea usually has to be done outside of the fabric of the organization to escape the antibodies and gain escape velocity. That's why things like experiments and pilots are so important, because they're not threatening and they're away from the mainstream. But the new idea can never survive or outlast the leader if it can't find its way to form back into the fabric of the organization. Otherwise, when the leader goes, it loses attention and it dies on the vine.
There's two elements there that I want to talk about to kind of tie this all together to wrap us up. One of them is the conceptual ideas behind management tools, because there's an analogy there that might stand for something. I've got in mind, I want to lay that on you next. And also the idea of embedding some of these things so that they stick. That's what we'll talk about when we come back to wrap up today's Pentagon Solutions conversation with Dave Wintergreen of the Department of Defense on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
I have this dream where I'm single-handedly facing down thousands of cyber terrorists trying to hack into the energy grid, communications infrastructure, and even defense systems. No matter what they do, nothing is getting past my security programs and firewalls. I'm shutting these guys down, identifying them, and... Wait a minute. Did I say dream? This is my real life. All because of my bachelor's degree in information assurance from Capital College.
If you want to use computers for the greater good, then look no further than the IA program at Capital to start building a career in cybersecurity. In addition to offering an exclusive job offer guarantee to undergraduates, Capital College is recognized as a national center of academic excellence in information assurance education by DHS and NSA.
Hackers can now only dream of getting past me. Capital College. It isn't for everyone, but it's perfect for me.
For information on campus tours and open houses at Capital College, visit capital-college.edu/radio. That's capital with an O, -college.edu/radio.
Do you hear that? That's a cyber attack in the making. It can come from anywhere, and the best defense starts with the best partner. Raytheon helps agencies secure systems, develop strategies, and identify security gaps with technology as strong as our team. After all, when your mission is cyber resiliency, your partner is Raytheon. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission.
GW Women's Basketball hosts Georgetown in a thrilling battle for D.C. supremacy on Saturday, December 1st at 4 p.m. at the Charles E. Smith Center in Foggy Bottom. It's the Colonials' annual Buff Out March, so make sure to wear your buff as the Colonials work to win a George versus George battle. Tickets are on sale now for just $12, and special group discounts are available. Raise high the buff and blue today. Call 202-994-7325. Or visit gwsports.com/tickets.
Hey, federal employees. Choose the plan we believe is altogether better for your health. Kaiser Permanente. Get the inside story on better care. Join a Kaiser Permanente physician for a complimentary Fed webinar scheduled most Wednesdays through December 5th. Go to kp.org/midatlantic to register for a webinar on Kaiser Permanente federal benefits. That's kp.org/midatlantic. Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States, Inc., 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
All government security starts with identity and access control technology. The leading conference and trade show for this growing sector is the 11th Annual Smart Card Alliance Government Conference, November 28th and 29th at the Washington Convention Center. Join over 1,000 government security professionals as they survey opportunities and challenges in personal identity verification programs, the new national strategy for trusted identities in cyberspace, trusted ID on mobile devices, and healthcare ID. Visit govsmartid.com for more info. Enter promo code RADIO for a 20% discount. Count.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's Pentagon Solutions today. My guest is Dave Wennergren, Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at the Department of Defense. Dave, we talked a moment ago about a couple of issues that I want to ask you about to wrap up. You use the term management tools, and I have to confess there is part of me that when I hear the term management tools, I wonder sometimes if that's not a euphemism for orders or commands or you have to do it this way. I know there's a difference. Tell me about implementing that difference and the delicacies of implementing that difference in the DOD context.
Yeah. So successful change leaders, I think, have to sort of recognize that there's many different ways to get change to happen. And depending on what it is that you want to occur, you know, you need different tools in your tool basket, so to speak. And so, you know, sometimes the best way to get something done is to allow it to be sort of grassroots, and it has then low resistance, low drag. People are excited about it because it's their idea and they go off and do things. And for some things, that works. For major changes, though, that will never work because you can't do it one by one by one. The Department of Defense would have had 50 public key infrastructure solutions and hundreds of smart cards if there hadn't come a moment in time when the leadership of the Department of Defense demanded 3.5 million people were going to implement the Common Access Card. That's an important step. And so then the good news is that you know, then you have this like leadership attention. The bad news is whenever somebody makes you do something, then it's no longer your thing. And so now the cultural change problems, you know, pile up because it's all the cliches, you know, the people from Washington, D.C. with the 3,000-mile screwdriver and they're, you know, they're trying to make me do this wacky stuff, right? And so the art of it is recognizing when it's a strategic change that requires leadership direction to just go do it, followed by some way to make sure that those people that are going to have to live it have skin in the game, because it has to outlast the leader. Otherwise, you know, there's organizational resistance and you slow roll and you hope it'll go away and all those things that we see happen over and over again. So the art of it is when your ideas become somebody else's actions. And how can you put into place a structure where they begin to own it and they understand the intent, but they get to be involved in the how, right? So the leader says, we're going to go here. But you get to help figure out how to get there. You don't get to argue about, do I want to go there? But you get to help figure out the how so that then it can be yours. And the change efforts that I've seen that have done the best are where, like, a year or two later when you check back in and you know, maybe somebody else has taken over and they've forgotten that you had anything to do with it. And they said, this is what we did. And they completely forgot that you might have been involved in helping shape the change because it became something that they could own and see through. They don't have skin in the game. It won't stick.
Now, that's exactly the word that I want to go to next, making it stick. What are the elements that you're working on among all of these things that we've talked about today, strategic management plan and all of the elements there? What do you do to make sure you use the elasticity analogy during the commercial break about how easy it is for people to go back to where they started, just as kind of human nature? How do you reset some of these things, make them the new normal so that people aren't tempted to go legacy on you?
Yeah, it's like the old saying about burning the boats and no turning back, right? You have to find ways to create, you know, that there's no course, but to continue on with the course. And there's so many things that you can do that. You know, celebrate your successes, be really visible, have the burning platform, and have a really, like, over communicate why it matters and all those kinds of things. But frankly, and it's a little bit cliche, but the performance management thing is just so hugely important. For us in DOD, we have this huge emphasis right now on creating a cost culture. You know, what does it cost? Why do you do it? Why does it cost that much? Is there a better way to do it? Can you describe what you want to achieve? Could we commit to an outcome? Can we measure that outcome? Can we do that in some way that's really visible? If you're an optimist, you know, you call that like management by attention, because the things that we focus our time and attention on, right, or the things that we're measuring are the things we focus our time and attention on. If you're a pessimist, it's management by embarrassment because somebody's, you know, calling you on the carpet if you're not getting things done. And I frankly don't care whether you're an optimist or a pessimist. It works. And so if you can come up with the outcome that everybody agrees to, the service level agreement or the performance measure, and you're visible about it and it's visible to everyone, we focus and move in that direction. And the beauty of it is you can tell that you're making progress, so you can overcome the sort of, oh, it's not going to work, fear and distress. But also, if it's not exactly right, you have a chance to change course.
You teased me a little bit earlier. We only have about a minute left, but you teased me a little bit earlier about the new SMP coming in June of next year. I'm not going to ask you to
stay tuned.
Yeah, I'm not going to ask you to speak out of school. But conceptually, are there broad concepts that we can expect to see? We have about 30 seconds. Yeah,
well, we like the seven major goals about the major business lines of the department. But what we've done over the last year is we've really advanced our portfolio management work to be able to sort of map the vertical functional leadership of the organization with the horizontals, if you will, the organizations that get the mission done, the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps. And so I think what you'll see is the seven major goals will stay very close to what they are. But what you'll see is a lot more work that aligns performance outcomes and initiatives across all of the organization. I can define the strategy, and then I can define the outcomes.
What a pleasure it's been to have you in the studio, Dave. Thank you very much for coming.
It's been great to be with you.
Dave Wintergreen is the Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at the Department of Defense. Our conversation archived at federalnewsradio.com later this afternoon. And hour number two of In Depth with Francis Rose is coming next. We'll